I'm Bill Littlefield, and it's time for three stories you should know. The NFL's anthem policy is back in the news, and that's where we're going to start this week. I'm joined by ESPN's Howard Bryant. Howard, welcome back.
Thank you.
And by the Boston Globe's Nora Princiotti. Welcome, Nora.
Thank you very much, Bill.
This week, the NFL Players Association filed a grievance protesting the NFL's national anthem policy. Commissioner Goodell had announced that players who didn't want to stand on the field during the playing of the anthem could remain in the locker room. The Players Union, which has also suggested negotiations with the league, has maintained that the policy seeks to, quote, thwart their constitutional rights. Malcolm Jenkins of the Eagles put it this way: everyone loses when voices are stifled. And the NFLPA is also contending that the league should not have instituted any policy without consulting with the players' union first. The NFL was hoping to turn everybody's attention back to the game on the field. Am I wrong in suggesting that the league completely underestimated the determination of the players to be heard in their opposition to racism and police brutality against minority citizens? And is anybody surprised that the NFLPA didn't accept stay in the locker room as an option? Howard?
Well, I think that the players sort of set themselves up on this, because if they had been hostile from the start, as they, I think they should have been, if they had been a union from the start, if the union had stepped forward and said, listen, even back in September when Donald Trump had called the players SOBs, instead of sort of being passive, which they had been, I think you'd have a different outcome right now. Now the players have to mount some sort of defense, and we're starting to see that. But they could have done this back in September.
Yeah, to be fair, individual players did stand up and did act,
yep,
and had something to say. The union, as you say, was very slow to react. But
they didn't know what to do.
Apparently they finally discovered what to do.
So what I will say is that the players were in some ways divided, but the thing that does seem to really unite these guys is when they feel disrespected. When Donald Trump made those comments, that was what really catalyzed a lot of unity among the players. It's a smaller scale, you know, no one's using the same type of language. But
yet,
I do think that you saw, sure, I don't think we'll be getting that from Roger Goodell, but I think you did see, you know, guys like Devin McCourty, who are involved with the Players Coalition, which is the group that's been most receptive to being a partner with the league. They said in response to the new rule, no one called us. No one talked to us. We have a history of working with these guys, and no one reached out. There's absolutely a good chance that more guys will protest just because they've been told that they can't.
It's interesting to me that now, fairly close to the time when training camps are going to open, the NFL does have to worry that this story is ongoing. They do not know week to week exactly what players are going to do, because there is no agreement.
Well, it's their own fault. It's their own fault, because
yes,
I think that they felt, look, they won. They'd already had Kaepernick out of the league. Nobody has given Eric Reid a job, so he's out of the league. And then what did the owners do? They bow to the president, and they essentially stab the players in the back, and here we go.
Nora, take us away from this potentially ongoing hideous situation, at least as far as the NFL is concerned. What's on your mind this week?
I am just consumed by World Cup coverage. I love it. 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 But
I think she likes
it. There's a lot of love in there.
There's
a lot of love
it
in the room.
And one of the things that I was loving so much was watching England, team that, you know, was exceeding expectations. And one of the best things about it was they had this catchy song. It's called Three Lions, and it's been sort of the unofficial theme song of England's soccer team, football, if you prefer, since it was commissioned in 1996 when England was about to hold the European Cup. And it has this wonderful sort of Beatles light-esque choral refrain about, it's coming home, it's coming home.
It's coming home, it's coming home, it's coming, football's coming home, it's coming home.
Since England was going to host the European Cup, it was international soccer returning to the place that considers itself the birthplace of the game. England thought it was going to host this World Cup, but Russia, which has come under scrutiny for, you know, a ton of bribery.
No.
I know. Shocked, I tell you. You know, Russia, which was considered to have one of the weaker bids, ends up winning out over England, which was part of the investigation into corruption and bribery in FIFA. voters accepting Picassos in exchange for their votes.
Not to mention envelopes stuffed with
envelopes
cash.
Stuffed
sure,
with money.
Yes.
I always go for the direct.
Exactly.
Forget the Picasso. Who knows right. what it's actually worth? Give me the envelope full of money.
I like the dramatic. I like the idea of, you know, how do you even, who transports the paintings? Mm.
Nora, if the sports writing thing doesn't work out, Nashville could be your next option. Very nicely done. But my main point vis-a-vis your song is I hope the song goes on because it's only 4 years until the next World Cup, you know, and it is never too early to start building momentum.
Absolutely. And I think it's fun. And I think you need that. And I think that one of the things that I enjoy most about the World Cup, not being an everyday soccer watcher, I'm not the guy watching the Premier League. I'm not that guy. But I do watch the World Cup because of the spectacle of it. It's a great, great tournament. And I think it's actually a lot of fun, the fact that England was under the radar. And normally, they walk in there chest puffing and then they lose and they leave head down. But this was very different. Is it possible to have an English Cinderella story? This was one of them. It was a good story.
I just want them to keep playing the song, even in the off years.
That's what I'm saying.
It's going to become your Sweet Caroline. You just hold on to it.
Howard, we're going to close out with an NBA story, and you've brought it to us.
Yes, well, the Golden State Warriors won the NBA title again, and they backed it up by signing DeMarcus Cousins, one of the best players in the NBA. And now everyone is losing their minds because the Warriors are going to have next season, they'll have a starting lineup at some point when he comes back from injury of five players who made the All-Star team this past season. It's Yankee-esque, right? And so people are thinking, break up the Warriors. But the commissioner, Adam Silver, sort of during his State of the Union address with the league, talked about how it was important to have the Warriors be dominant and that they should continue their dominance. And it's been fascinating that this team, the Golden State Warriors, they've been terrible for so many years. And now we're talking about them like they're Microsoft or like they're Apple or something. And so there's a movement to break up the Warriors. And I'm wondering what's happened to us and what happened to our sort of institutional memory when you look at the Los Angeles Lakers
or the Celtics
from 1980 to 2010. The Lakers won 16 Western Conference championships, 16 out of 30, and they won 10 championships. The Celtics won, they went to the finals 12 out of 13 years, and they won 8 straight titles in the 1960s. So it's interesting to me that now we have this sort of the NBA is doomed argument simply because Kevin Durant went to the Warriors and because the Warriors are having a nice little run right now. So part of me asks the question, what happened to our collective attitude? Do we simply not know the NBA, or have we just reached a point where are we upset that players are making these decisions to go and use their power and change the balance? Because when teams trade players, very few times do people say anything. They may get upset for a day or two, but they don't say the entire league is in trouble.
That is one of the things that continues to boggle my mind, is that people do tend to take the side of billionaire owners over, you know, it's management over labor. And you see it time and time again. That does tend to be the perspective a lot of fans take. I've never really understood why, except that it has to do with you root for the laundry kind of thing. So I think there's some merit to that. I don't personally get it.
It's not a new argument, as you have pointed out. And in fact, we used to hear it all the time, and sometimes we still do, about the UConn women's basketball
team.
They're too
good. They're too good.
They're too good. They go 38-0, 39-0. They never lose. I like to point out that they have not been the champions the last two years.
That's right.
And that Gino Auriemma, the coach of that team, had, I thought, the perfect response. His response was, why don't the other teams get better?
Well, and that's the other point about this. I think that when I look at this, it's happening in a time frame where we are encouraging and organizations are flaunting the idea of tanking, of losing on purpose. And people, when they deal with this, they say, well, the organization's got a strategy. And they say, oh, this is part of the plan. This is how you get better. I think the Warriors have a pretty good plan, too, which is to get better every single
better
year,
players.
Every single month, and beat you right here and beat you right now.
My guests for this week's edition of Three Stories You Should Know have been Howard Bryant of ESPN and NPR and the Boston Globe's Nora Princiotti. Thanks to both of you.
You got it.
Thank you.